Hello everyone. So as I said earlier, Roshi is not there, so she asked me to do the talk. I took the subway today, and in Paris they have this, in the subway, very often they have poetry posted on the wall, on the walls everywhere. And there was one that I noticed today that really struck me. Very short poetry that was written by a 10-year-old kid. I believe it's a guy. His name is Malo, so it's probably a guy. His name is Malo Ukum Singh. And he won the great prize for poetry this year. And so it's in French, but I translated it. And he wrote, out of fear that his shadow goes away, he sticks it to his feet. Out of fear that his ideas go away, he fixes it to his mind. Out of fear that his desires abandon him, he hangs it to his heart. 10 years old. I thought, this is familiar. I can relate to that. And really what strikes me is that he starts with out of fear. And very often there are some, you know, books about, Buddhist books about living fearlessly. That idea that if you drop all your ideas, you end up living fearlessly. And this is almost something, an ideal, a bodhisattva ideal, to live fearlessly. But in order to live fearlessly, one has to achieve, cultivate certain number of qualities. And he, this little boy, pins it down, I feel, very, very nicely. That his shadow goes away, so his identity, his being, he sticks it to his feet. We're very attached to our own existence. Ideas, we fix it to our mind. We're very attached to our ideas and our desires. And I do not remember how it came about, but I think it kind of came about very suddenly about 10 days ago. And since then I've kept having this idea in my mind that I was pondering on the word wild, wildflower. What does it mean, wild? And it came to me that for me it had an echo or maybe an equivalence or should I say a contemporary translation for the word Buddha nature. We always use that word Buddha nature, something that for a long time has puzzled me. What does it mean? We have koans, Does the Tao have Buddha nature? This is our first koan. So what does that Buddha nature is? That's the first one, that's Mu. And many definitions have been given. There is an essay that Dogen wrote, so Dogen, 13th century, that he wrote on Buddha nature, Busho, it's called. And he asked the question, what is that Buddha nature? And he quotes the Nirvana Sutra, which was a sutra that was written 500 years after Gotama's passing away, where it is said that all sentient beings have Buddha nature. And this is something that we always kind of repeat, that we all have Buddha nature. All sentient beings have Buddha nature. And that, so that goes back at least to the Nirvana Sutra, to this very, very old text from the Mahayana tradition. And Dogen actually answers by another question. He says, what is it that just go here? What is it that just go here? And so what is it that when I drop all my ideas, all my conceptions about myself, all my attachments about my desires, when I open up, what is it that just go here? What is it that happens before any conceptual ideas that comes up? And that's entering in that space of wilderness. If we think, you know, children are wild, or I'm becoming wild, like we do something wild, that's understood as we really go into a territory where we feel free because we abandon our identities, and we feel free to explore. So I felt that Buddha nature is if that term is actually obscure, that could be that another translation could be this wild refers to this wild aspect. And just by miracle, I just stumbled into a song by a guitar player that I like very much. He used to be the guitar player from the iconic New York band Sonic Youth, and he released an album recently. And there was a song called "Speak to the Wild," and he said, "Speak to the wild, reach for the wire, protect your child from empty empire." How do we speak to the wild? You know, and for me, the act of sitting is essential to our ability to cultivate that ability to speak to the world, that cultivates that in the sense that we sit and we open up to whatever occurs, whether it's distress, joy, sadness, Last weekend, I was commemorating the 2 years of my mother passing away, and we did a weekend with Gena Roshi at my house, and we sat on Sunday morning. So it was her 2 year anniversary that day, last Sunday. And before that, we were talking, sharing experiences about mediumship, talking to communication with the deceased. I don't really know what I feel about it. I dropped a lot of my opinions about it. I really don't know, and I'm open to anything. And yet at that moment, I was kind of hoping that something would happen. So I was sitting in Zazen, and we were facing the trees outside, and I was watching, and I was, the thought that came coming back is that something, a sign might manifest itself. So I was looking for external signs. And it took me a while to realize that my mind was actually very much focused on very specific things that I was actually looking for. Like a bird, an appearance of some strange bird, unusual birds, a special light, something. Until I realized that it could take any form. And even then I was thinking, oh yeah, I'm very open to whatever happens. But I was so determined to actually witnessing something very specific that I wasn't actually open to it. So I don't really know what happened at that point. I cannot say I for sure that I received any signs, but the point is that I was making it, I was narrowing it down. And I felt this is very much how we operate also, narrowing down to choices, things that we want to see, that we want to get, that we want to experience. And if we do, when we do that, we miss all the other possibilities. So meditation is really an act of cultivation, that ability to speak to the wild within us. And as summer is approaching, I mean, holidays for some of us is approaching. For me, I'm leaving next week. I know that, well, I'm going to retreat at the end of July, but for Tanya's transmission. But there will be also less sitting outside this period, because I'll be moving around a lot. But I feel we need, for me, it's very important to find not to limit really the cultivation of these qualities to just the moment when we actually, when I formally sit down. And this openness to the wild can happen any moment. And I think I was reflecting, the reason why I got around that term is that I was reflecting on, after all these years with Roshi, on as I'm about to receive transmission, what's the most essential teaching that I've received from her? What touched me the most? And I think I realized that it was just there in the name of Asanga. That we really embodied this by not having a center, then having a center, then leaving the center, then moving on to a practice online, experiencing all kinds of things, going to places where we had nothing, going to also venues that were sometimes difficult to handle and just adapt and welcome that. And not being fixed on how things should be. And we've adapted so much. And I think that I was going back to that. That's what I've experienced with her. That's what I've experienced with you all. It has been so precious. I feel that this name of this Sangha really is a wonderful koan and a beautiful teaching, a core teaching of about how to live a flourishing life. And over the past month, I've kept having discussions about what am I going to do with that and how. Receiving transmission means that also you have a moral obligation to share your practice and pass it on, pass the wisdom on, pass the thing that I have received that is not something that I have to someone else. And in order to do that, there's like we live in the world of form, so it has to take a form. So I had a lot of ideas when we left the center. I thought I was willing to get another center, to look for another center, and then we dropped that idea, and then I had other ideas, and I had a lot of ideas. And the more it actually the date is approaching, the less ideas I have. And now I actually have absolutely none. None. She was asking me, you know, when shall we start? I was like, I don't know. Shall we be at your place? I was like, yeah, sure. I don't know. When? Whatever. I don't know. I really don't know. And that also goes hand to hand with a willingness to a desire, a willingness to respond to the situation also. And all the ideas that I had, I realized didn't fit the situation at all. It made any sense, it made no sense whatsoever. And so there's a, right now there's a trust also that, well, I open up, I see what's there, and let's see how to respond in the best possible way. And it's always changing, so that needs also, the response needs to change all the time also. I'm going to say something that we, many of us said already, and I said also, but I'm saying it again as this year before the summer ends. It was a fantastic year for the Sangha. That really taught me so much and helped me so much to show up and to be present and to feel the even though we're not physically together in the same room, we are in a virtual room, and it was very has been wonderful to see the dynamic and it's really like an inspiration. Roshi said to me many times, transmission is about you being ready, me being ready, and the Sangha being ready. And none of it could happen if one of these elements were not present. It's a big, difficult training to come forward and to speak, I find. It's not easy. And at the same time, I do feel that it's can be useful, and one has to say something. One has to clarify. And also the sharing is goes through other, through, takes many forms, not just speaking. So I'm really looking forward to the retreat. Really, really looking forward to for us to be able to serve each other and do things together and be in the same room and bow together and have continue to share that sense of community, but in the same room. I find that it does, I miss that. I really miss that. It has been my fear that during out of this period of confinement, of lockdown, and of being spending so much time by myself and just interacting with people on screen, that that once you go back to the real life, go in the subway again and interact with people, then you get the real stuff, and then all the reactivity starts, because it's so much easier to feel very, very quiet, peaceful with yourself when you're by yourself, not seeing anybody. And that's why I feel it's very important to maintain that contact that with reality, with real people, with real interaction. To test also our ability to maintain what we're trying to cultivate within our sitting practice. Our ability to embrace whatever comes up, to let go of reactivity, to behold the ceasing of reactivity and to respond to the situation, to act, to live a full life, an ethical life. And then we live fearlessly, thinking maybe the element of fear is something that we can reflect upon, and that gives an indication where we are with our attachments, where we are with our ability to encounter the wild, to speak to the wild. Where are our fears? Maybe I'll stop there. If you have any comments and things you want to share.
Joa.
Yes.
Can you say the poem in French?
Yeah.
We don't have, sorry.
The poem, I took a picture of it. Poem. It said, De peur que son ombre s'en aille, il la colle à ses pieds. De peur que ses idées ne partent, il les fixe à son esprit. De peur que ses envies ne l'abandonnent, il se les accroche au cœur.
Merci. Oui, pendant que tu... Ah, je parlais en français tout de suite. The time you are talking in this experience with our reaction to COVID. This reaction, this to adapt and to... We make that all the time, and you make that in your transmission too. It comes, the transmission, it's a new situation, I think. And I remember what stay by us in this year. We are all together here. It's not this, it's a remember from this times here. I don't know. I remember this Dharma brother from Amy. He was here talking.
Frank Murphy.
No.
Oh, Michelle. No. Michelle Tatum.
Michelle.
Michelle Sensei. Yeah.
And he talk about all is about remembering, mm-hmm. and forgetting and remembering, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. And this is like a movement that stay by us with this experience to be here 1.5 years together in the screen. It's this remembering from this year. It's very, very, very strong. Mm. And it's the wild. It's the... Yes, I can understand this... reflecting about this word, this wild flowers. Thank you.
Joao?
Yeah?
It's something that I don't know. So how does it work? You will receive the transmission, and that means that you are supposed to gather to form a sangha yourself, a sangha, another sangha.
Well, the situation is, if I compare to Tanya or Scott that is going to receive transmission now, they are in a different geographical area. They are in England, and they don't, you know, so they have their own group. They've had their own group for some time already. Here with Amy, with Amy Roshi, we were in Paris together. So for the moment, the idea of transmission, yes. I mean, now I'm, you know, if some people have a connection with me and they want to do Jukai with me or study with me, or I'm entitled to give them the precept. But for the moment, what we've decided is that there is no particular reason why I should, you know, leave the group or something like that. I will probably you know, offer sesshins when she's not around. I will very likely offer study groups on texts that she's not, that you know, that's not necessarily her thing, or take a different angle and do things on my own. And but for the moment, there is no particular reason for me to go anywhere else. No. If I move out of Paris, if I do something that's totally out of the way of what she wants to do with Wildflower, then, you know, something else will happen and we'll see. But for the moment, I'm in Paris, nothing changes. Yeah, nothing changes, but things might change and things will change, but we'll see. In her case, she received transmission, she was living next door, and then at some point she wanted to do other things, so she really took off on her own. But in the early stages, nothing really happened. So we'll see. There is no obligation for me to do anything. And so, yeah, I guess I will just continue. I will continue, but I want to offer things. I want to offer a study group probably in September, October on Buddhist texts that I find interesting, and probably a retreat at my place with or without her. We'll see. And, we'll see. There's no obligation, no plans, no set plans of any kind. And she's very, and we've decided that for the moment we'll continue as we did previously.
Thank you.
Lisa?
No, sorry, it was a mistake.
Okay.
Thank you.
Claudia?
I just wanted to, can you hear me well?
Yeah. Yes.
I just wanted to say that this idea, I think you've spoken already before of meeting the wild. For me at least, it's a powerful idea. And I remember, I think you spoke some time ago, maybe someone in an interview or a story, someone who had his family, but he would go every day alone. I don't know if it was a river, if it was fishing or swimming. And I think, I don't know very well if it's really this way, the story, but that's where he met the wild, maybe. That's, mm-hmm. I'm not sure if. And I found it really interesting. I don't know if it's the idea of being alone, being in nature, being with himself, being always in the same situation, but maybe everything changing. And I asked myself, and maybe you, if we can say also meeting the wild inside, the not knowing, not controlling, being surprised, seeing the movement, the changing. Anyway, I just wanted to say that I find this idea of the wild, meeting the wild, very, very interesting. Mm. Very.
Yeah, the story was you're referring to was the documentary My Octopus Teacher.
Yes, I think that's the one. Yeah.
And I've read recently also a book by a guy called Geoffroy Delorme in French. And it's a young man. He's early 30s, I think, now. The book is called L'Homme Chevreuil. And he lived for 7 years in a forest without any equipment. He didn't have a sleeping bag for 7 years. From time to time, like once a month, he would go back to his parents' house. But after a while, he just felt that it was the smell of all this, the detergents and all that were really bothering him. So he even stopped going there. And what he did, he became friends with Debbie, how do you say chevreuil?
I don't know. I'm trying to think. Is it a not a deer?
Well, some kind of deer.
Some kind of deer.
Yeah, some kind of deer. And he actually became friends with deers, which are really wild animals, and it's very difficult to approach them.
Mm-hmm.
But he witnessed. He was really observing them, witnessing them, trying to copy the way they would go around, and he actually ended up really being part of the group. So it's the same thing as the octopus teacher, in the sense that you actually, at some point, you just really stop and open your eyes and ears and all your senses and observe. And when you really observe, everything becomes very interesting, full of resources, and rich. And he, this guy ended up, so living for 7 years, he was like sucking leaves, and he totally changed the way he was eating, obviously just eating things. It was a forest in Normandy in France. And he, at some point, he also explains how he managed to teach the deers how to avoid the hunters, because he got so close to the deers that he managed to get for them to trust him and to follow him. So he managed to find a way to actually communicate with them. So it's very inspiring, in the sense that, I mean, this is obviously very extreme, but it talks about really our ability to, at some point, drop all ideas and just be in an environment where you're like, I'm gonna see, I'm gonna watch. And when we live that way, something happens. quite extraordinary, and at the same time, very, very simple, very down to earth. And I've been, over the past year, I've read a lot of texts from our tradition, our Buddhist traditions. And as I was moving, I was reading them on a chronologically. And as I arrived in the Zen tradition, I really appreciated the fact that it's very so down to earth. It's like, what is the Buddha, the apple tree in the garden? It really, if we're able to watch, really, it's really right there. I think Dogen also had another another definition for Buddha nature, I think, where he said like rocks and trees and things like that. You know, it's really, can we see really what's in front of us, but really see it? So yeah, that's meaning the wild. So these are two examples, two very different examples, but the sea and the forest, about, you know, going into an environment that you really do not know, you ignore everything, and you're able to learn something. I was at Dana today to work on my kesa, and I think it's there that someone said, so I had this huge piece of cloth, the kesa, like it's really long, and someone said, oh yeah, vast is the robe of liberation. Huh? I was like, yeah, it is. It is vast. It took me a long time, and it's vast, and it's you know, it's in the sea, it's in the forest, it's everywhere. Yeah, Debbie.
Well, first of all, I wanted to thank you for this poem. It's wonderful. I can't believe that's a child, but okay. And the other element of this wild thing, this came up with, we talked about this in some, either it was a practice day or, yeah, I think it was a practice day at the center. There, I feel the attraction, and yet there's something frightening. Because how far wild can you go before you're too wild, sort of thing. I mean, yeah, I guess that's my feeling about it. It's very attractive, and at the same time, it's what is the measure? Where's the end to this sort of thing? That scares me a little bit. Mm. And another thing that you made me think of, and there, it wasn't a wild animal, but I had never, up in Frank, where Frank does his sesshin, there are sheep. And I had never had a sheep friend, but I every time I went by the sheep place to go to the Zendo, one of the sheep and I started hooking up together. And sheep are not the same as cats and dogs and so. I know they're domesticated and everything. I got so into this animal. It was just amazing. And I think it was mutual. Every time I went by, I don't know if it was a girl or a boy sheep, would come in and chat with me, sort of. And also just touching them. But I'm not a farm girl, so this to me was very exciting. So I know what you're talking about to a certain extent.
Thank you. Yeah, it reminds me, what you're saying reminds me, I haven't seen it, but there is a documentary in France that a friend of mine did about cows. And it's very peculiar, apparently, this documentary, because there's no talking whatsoever, no explanation whatsoever. And for an hour and a half, it's just the camera filming cows. And apparently, you're not bored a single minute. I don't know what it's probably called, Bovin, I think, something like that. Bovin, I think the documentary is called. And on the first thing that you say, what I hear is, what are you pointing to the direction of, you know, this wilderness? Where does the craziness start, or something like that? Or where does when do you? And to me, my immediate response, you know, this wilderness, meeting the wild, is like the first three tasks: embracing life, letting go of reactivity, seeing it ceasing. But the fourth one is really the Eightfold Path. And the Eightfold Path is like kind of the ethical framework also. And it's really, we live fearlessly, but also while living fearlessly, we live ethically, because also we recognize that the other one is just like me, and we care, and there's a sense of care. You know, the last words of the Buddha is tread this path with care. That's his last words. So the care, the caring aspect is the container. And if we have that in mind, you know, we experience the wilderness, but we experience this wilderness also while meeting this wilderness. We also, I read recently in one of the texts that, you know, I think it's Nyojo, the Dogen's teacher, who says, you know, if you just sit by yourself and you have a great insight and the great oneness, you know, you realize the oneness of the universe and all that. But then there is no sense whatsoever of compassion. You're missing the whole point. So our path is really the path of the Bodhisattva, and the path of the Bodhisattva, remember the text that we explored with, you know, it's really in Dana, it's really about also interdependence. It's a relational path. And so for me, that's what also binds the whole thing together. The relational dimension, the caring dimension, the compassionate dimension, you know, of that practice. That does make sense?
No, I hear what you're saying, and that gives the container. At the same time, even a little bit of wildness can be frightening to other people. And so if you're always being attentive to how it might strike other people, you can't go very far. And if you, I don't know if I'm clear. You know, at least in my experience, if you start moving outside the mold, whatever it's called in English, mold, you're, can make other people uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's true. And I guess our practice helps us also to be sensitive to that and find the most appropriate action. And sometimes it's, you know, it's not appropriate to do certain things. And you respect that. And at the same time, you respond differently. Think about, actually, it's funny how in all the koans that we actually study, that so many times there's the same question appears under different forms sometimes, and all kinds of answers also happens. But because the situations are very different, you know, the oak tree in the garden, or the 4 kilos of flour to as an answer for what is Buddha, it depends on the situation. So that wilderness has to take into account also,
I had someone staying in my house who did not have a spiritual practice, who was very put out by the fact that I sat. I don't know if this has happened to other people, but you know, the minute you're kind of different, so to what extent, you know, do you say other people's, anywhere she was talking the other, she was quoting something. It doesn't make any difference what people think. I mean, it wasn't quite that, but it was a little bit, don't be attentive to what other people think. I'm not trying to argue, but it can get complicated. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, it is. It is complicated. Yes. But I mean, my experience is just, we get, the practice can help us to be better at integrating all the various elements, because we're not stuck anywhere, because we can see the various dimensions, and we're not, you know, if someone is really, really bothered by you sitting, you know that you can also drop it for a day, you know, or do it differently, or, you know, hearing why is it bothering her or something like that, or, you know, offering a different response, because we're not stuck, you know. So I find that helps us. And again, it's always this, this idea that when things get stuck, how do we make it fluid again? And that's something that we're cultivating, and that wilderness aspect is that wilderness dimension is really that ability to function freely, and hence without any fixed, fixed ideas and things. But and it's hard. it's a never-ending task. Never-ending task. So vast is the robe of liberation. All right, we'll stop there, and thank you so much, and thank you so much. Have a good, great summer, some of you I'll see you in August. Thank you, Debbie. Can you do the vows?
Should I keep? Turn off the taping?
Yes.
Okay.